All right, everyone, welcome to another episode of the Martin's World podcast. And just before I get into introducing today's guest, guys, I'd just like to remind you, if you want to support the show, support the fight for cannabis legalization in Ireland, you can do so by signing up to the patreon.com/Martin's World, or you can also make a donation in the form of cryptocurrency over on the links found on martinsworld.ie. Today's guest then, guys, is Selena Stein. Selena Stein suffers with fibromyalgia and a number of other conditions, and cannabis has been incredibly beneficial for her for many, many years. Selena Stein then was recently pulled in by the cops as her car was marked as being known to be driven by a person who is under the influence of cannabis. Selena's gone through a number of court cases now, and she's found that the judges were prejudicious against her, and that she now has an opportunity to set a legal precedent in the higher courts in the UK. This legal precedent will not only help Selena, but will help many other patients out there who rely on cannabis as a therapeutic tool to deal with the symptoms of their conditions and to be able to drive their car then at the same time. As currently in the UK, much like Ireland as well, they have what are known as a zero tolerance limits around cannabis and driving. The limit is set so low that, like, if you were even to be in the same room as somebody who was consuming cannabis, you could probably be set over the limit. It's not reflective at all as limits that would be used to maintain road safety at all. No, those limits would probably be set a lot higher and be accompanied with sobriety testing. I came across Selena's story when she posted recently looking for help from Outlaw. She mentioned on a recent post there of Outlaws that she'd reached out to him and had no luck, you know, in terms of response from him. So I reached out to Selena to see if I could help in any way at all to raise awareness of what's going on there, of our situation, and also maybe try to get Outlaw, you know, to look at her case and to maybe reach out and help her if at all possible. Selena needs to raise a significant amount of money, €5,000 in total, in order to bring her case to the High Court. But she needs just to raise €1,000 to get the ball rolling on that court case. So if there's anybody out there and they've got that kind of money, if you've got that kind of money sitting around and you can help out, do get in touch with Selena. It's Selena Angel Stein over on Facebook. We need to look out for one another, guys. We need to be supporting each other and get people like this to the higher courts to set the precedent, because these laws are discriminating against people like Selena every day, and they need to be challenged. So Selena's definitely got a good case there to be put forward to challenge these laws and discrimination that they put on people who use cannabis as a therapeutic aid. So guys, without further ado, I give you Selena Stein.
I think it's important that we kind of get this out there.
Yeah.
I actually done an interview the other night with lads who run another podcast, and they're kind of more based in the UK. And they were big supporters of Outlaw, but through their own podcast, there seems to be a lot of skepticism being rose about the guy.
It's funny, because literally, just as you sent me a message, the first time after me messaging him quite a few times, he's actually messaged back, and he said he's going to look at his messages. Yeah. So I've got to wait for a response now, because I have contacted him a few times. At the time, I had everything in hand and everything I needed, so I didn't need his help. But as soon as I did, I reached out, and then I heard nothing, and I've heard lots of people have heard nothing as well. But yeah, he's now contacted me. So, I mean, I'm in a sticky situation at the moment, just because the person that I've got representing me, I've met him once. He was recommended from a friend. Now, he won't give up his details, his actual business details. We know where he's from and things like that, but he won't give it up so someone can look him up.
So, like, your solicitor, you don't really know much about him.
The barrister. Yeah. So he's through a friend.
Yeah.
Now, I've been using him, before I tell you the whole story, I've been using him since I was come out of magistrate's court. And the guy who introduced me, I thought he was his mentor, but I found out since he was recommended through a friend. So we're not 100% guaranteed he is who he is. But I think he is, just because of what I've seen, and I've met up with him and stuff, but I can't guarantee that. So the person, Guy, he's helping me. You know Guy Coxall.
Guy Coxall, yeah. He's our future.
He's been a massive part of this.
Yeah.
And I can totally understand where he's coming from, wanting to know who this guy is and wanting to know his details.
Mm-hmm.
I can totally get that. But I'm stuck in the middle here by going, okay, I'll take that to James. Okay, I'll take that to Guy. Okay, and I'm stuck in the middle here. So I'm thinking, I need to do something. I need to try and raise this money and get this money somehow without them to sort of like doing what they're doing.
Yeah, yeah. So what's the situation with yourself? So what's started all the trouble, I suppose? Where did this all begin for yourself?
Back in 2020, I think it was around about May time, I got pulled over.
Okay, so during the pandemic.
Mm-hmm, during the pandemic. So he come up to the side of my car. He says, you have a mark on your car as having someone under the influence of cannabis and driving. Have you used cannabis today? Yeah. Okay, so then I went through the test. No PPE, no nothing, nothing in the car or whatever. It comes back positive. We go do the blood test. Everything was done right.
Mm-hmm.
I won't say that, but the problem was the first time I went to the magistrates, I said, because I had Guy helping me at this point, helping me put together my dossier. I went into the court and I said, I don't want to plead at present. I want to go straight to trial, as is my right.
Mm-hmm.
So because that's a lay person there, basically, isn't it? The first magistrates. So I had to come back to the while we were there, actually, I should say, because I asked to go straight to trial, they asked to read the PC statement. Now, in his statement, he said, I stopped on a roundabout. I was like, what? I stopped on a roundabout. Okay, no, that's absolutely fine. That's one to me. I'll put that in the bag.
Yeah.
All the time, I'm always polite, I'm always nice, and I go by the court rules. So I think, okay, no worries. So when we go in front of a judge the second time, because I have to then tell him why I want to go straight to trial, blah, 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 they read out his statement again. So he's taken this whole roundabout part out now because he knows I've found out about the roundabout and that didn't happen. It's just crazy. So eventually, I mean, in between this, they called me back a couple more times because one time they wanted the trial to go ahead without the officer, and I was like, no, he was supposed to go on a firearms course, and I'm like, well, I do not want a firearms officer on the road that lies through his back teeth. Mm-hmm. Don't think so. I then wrote to the courts and asked for another date because it's imperative he needs to be in court.
Yeah. So
I went through his process, and then over the months Guy helped me get the whole dossier. I can send you everything, I can email you everything. Yeah. We've done.
Well, at that point, you didn't even have to oblige them with another date, though. He should have had to show up on that date. And if you showed up to court and the cop didn't, then it's for the court to decide on that day whether the case should be struck out or should go ahead. At least that's how I would understand it. It kind of works in Ireland, but maybe it's a bit different in the UK.
Yeah, they wrote to me saying that he wasn't going to be there. So I sent in an email straight away saying, no, he's got to be there.
Yeah, yeah. So you were being obliging by asking for another day then, because yeah. I don't think you were you didn't have to do that for them. Like, you know, it's like it's
no,
like
but they didn't want him
to be there.
He lied. They didn't want him in court.
Yeah.
So the first time, that's not the end of it though.
Yeah.
So then I get my a date to go to the magistrates.
Mm-hmm.
I go to the magistrate. It's supposed to be. They've changed the place and the time to another magistrate's across town without telling me. Now, I got home after the magistrates and found the letter on my doorstep. So lucky enough, because I don't trust anyone,
mm-hmm.
we went down the courts first thing in the morning. So we were there really early. So I found out early that they changed it. So we all ran up to the other one. And that happened again when I actually went through on my trial. That happened exactly the same thing happened when I went to the trial, because I did represent myself through magistrates with the help of Guy. They changed the location again. So we literally had half an hour to get from one place to the other.
Jeez.
Absolutely madness. It's crazy. This whole thing's been crazy. That's not the end. So I go into the magistrates. Obviously the prosecution goes first and everything else, asking him the questions.
Mm-hmm.
So then I asked mine. I can send you them all. I won't remember them all now. But I just started by saying, so how long have you been an officer? So many years. So you class yourself as an experienced officer. Okay. And when he was in court, the time when he was there at the trial, he left all the roundabout and everything out. And he went right back to the first story. I stopped her and I said, so the first magistrates we went to, I said, they read out your statement and they said, you said I stopped on a roundabout. Why is that? Oh, I can't remember. Okay. I said, so the next magistrates we go to, I said, you took the whole roundabout part out. Why is that? Can't remember. I said, do you realise in 2018 the legislation changed so that cannabis can be prescribed? No, I didn't know that. I was like, oh, fuck's sake. So I carried on questioning. By this time, I've got the judge all on my side.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give him a few more questions. As I say, I can send you all these. But the long story short, the judge said to me, look, he says, I am not powerful enough. The way they've put the charge, I am not powerful enough to do anything about this charge. He says, but what I can do, and he gave me Article 6 to use in my evidence. He told me how to get compensation out of them, and he wanted me to appeal.
Mm-hmm.
Well, lucky enough, another guy that was there who was going to be an expert witness, but obviously I weren't allowed any of them in, was Chris Tasker. Now, it was him that would talk to this guy, this barrister, and he wanted to represent me in Crown because I was going to appeal and everything, free of charge.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, fair enough. So when we come out of court, he did have to give me 12-month ban, but he fined me £420. So, yes. But, yeah, he was he was really happy to hear that I was going to appeal. He was just sorry he couldn't do anything. So
does the now, ban still stand while your appeal? Or is it like here, when I got banned from driving for having cannabis in my possession, a ban still stands?
I didn't ask for my license back because I just thought we could get through this. I said, just leave it as it is at the moment and we'll carry on.
Yeah, when I lodged my appeal, I was able to remain driving until my appeal came back up then.
So yeah, I didn't ask. In that regard. That was recommended by talking to this barrister that that was the best way to go about it.
Mm-hmm.
So this guy said that we need £3,000 to go to court, to go to Crown Court. And I'm like, oh, here we go. Money we didn't expect to, and he said that was sort of like for charges for the courts and the insurance or something. So I start a crowdfund, I start getting bits and pieces coming through, but in the end I had to use a good 2,000 of my money.
Mm-hmm.
And I raised 1,000. So I did meet with the barrister. We had a really good chat over many hours. We've had lots of chats about what to do. So in the process of the Crown Court, because I was still doing it on my own at this time, because the barrister didn't want to say anything that he's there at present. He wanted it to look like I was doing it still. So then I put in my appeal and he was helping me by writing everything out, I was copy-pasting and sending it off. So this went sort of like to and fro, asking for dates, and they were asking. I went to the courts and the first time I went there again, they changed the date and time at the Crown Court. Again, no, every time, apart from the last two times, it always changing.
They didn't change the time to 4:20, did they?
No. The first time I went in there, that was the mention here, and so you go in why you want to go, sort of like appealing and stuff. I thought I need a good 2 days. When he first saw me and saw the paperwork, he was like, oh, you cannabis people, you should be going to the government with this, not to the courts. And I went, oh, ting, another one, thank you.
It's good. It's a kind of good to hear that, but it's not also, because it's like the judge should be also going to the government, because like if he's one of these cannabis people, it's like, no, don't express that to me. Express that to the bloody government, and don't tell me go to the government, because you don't know if I'm already going, because you probably are already campaigning by the sounds of it. Like, you know, Guy Coxall and the guys, like, so we are on the government's case as well as in front of judges, but that's not by our choice. That's by his system's choice or her system's choice, whoever the judge might be. Go on.
No. So anyway, yeah, and Guy's still helping me at this point, sort of like giving me bits and pieces still as well. So where are we? So yeah, went to the mention hearing. He would only give me half a day when I asked for two. Mm-hmm. So there would have been no time for my witnesses or anything like that. So I thought, oh, ching ching, two more. That's all right, you keep coming. So when I left there and told the barrister, blah, 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 we put in a request for transcript. Because he sort of like said what he did, mm-hmm. my feeling was he was prejudiced as soon as I walked through the door. So I want that transcript. They didn't send it in. I emailed and emailed and they didn't send it. They said they'd sent it, but they never sent it. I've got all the emails. Okay. Eventually, after getting in touch with Opus 2, because that's who does the transcripts, two or three times, they then, when I then went back to the courts and I said, look, I phoned Opus, they said, oh, there was a problem. They couldn't send it because there was a problem with their machine, but they've sent it now. Okay. So I wait another couple, sort of like a week or so, nothing. So I contact Opus again. And I think it was just when I contacted them, they'd sent it through. So it was only the last week, in the last few days, they've sent me this. Now, I applied for that, first of all, on, I think it was the 1st of November. So I had to do to and fro. But I went in again before the trial, mm-hmm. Because he wanted to know, have I got everything together and why I hadn't given him all the information on what my expert witnesses want to say and things like that. Or, well, I don't need that for this. You don't need to know everything about that. That's what the trial's for. So I just got to remember now, my fibro's coming in now. That's right. That's where I said, when I come out of the court and told the barrister, he said, okay, well, you write an email saying, if you don't give me the 2 days, you don't give me everything I need for my witnesses to allow time to get to court, considering COVID and everything else, again, I can send you all this. You didn't give me enough time. Half a day is not enough time to have my witnesses say what they need to say. I said, then he called me back to court again once I'd done this. Because I said, you give me no choice. If you don't give me the time, you'd give me no choice than to withdraw my appeal, because you're not giving me everything I need to a fair trial. Mm-hmm. So I went in on the 3rd, because he called me in again on the 3rd of November, and he said, no, sorry, this trial's going ahead as it should. So mm-hmm. I didn't get any extra dates or anything like that. So when I went in the next day, I'd already sent an email revoking my appeal, because I had no other choice than to do that, because he wouldn't give me what I needed for my trial. So I went in the next day for the charges, because obviously there's court charges, because I'd been there a couple of times, and the prosecution and everything else. And then he said, well, have you got anything to say? And I'm like, oh, thank you. So that's where I reiterated what he said to me when I first went to court about being, you know, the way it was prejudiced, mm-hmm. and not giving me time for my witnesses, not giving me, allowing me time to get in touch with them, considering COVID and everything else. So I had all these points to put to get on record, so I can then get that for my judicial review. So that's where we're at now. Because I had to pull out, because they wouldn't give me what I needed to do, the barrister says I've got a really good case for judicial review. because of everything they've done. I mean, even after the case, I was still asking for these transcripts that they weren't being sent. They weren't sent at all until a few days ago.
So you did get them in the end?
I've just paid for one. The second one, I got the email yesterday.
Yeah.
So I've got to pay for that transcript. So they are underway now.
Are they expensive?
One is only half an hour and it's £100. The other one is a bit longer. I think that's about £160.
What? That's like,
so that's all crazy money. That's money coming out of my pocket now. I'm trying to do this for the greater good of everyone because I want to get to High Court because that's where legislation's changed, isn't it?
Defend yourself shouldn't be costing you this in society. Like how are people expected to be forking out this? Like if you're on, I don't know, you said you fibromyalgia, is that you suffer with? So I don't know. Yeah, are you able to work as a result of that then? Or are you on disability as a result?
No, I'm not working now. I got made redundant. I was in a part-time job because of cannabis. Yeah. I've used cannabis for years and years. I went back to work with it. So yeah, I could work part-time, but I got made redundant. So I can't get another job now. I haven't got a car. I can't bus drive to work, then work a day and then bus drive home.
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm stuck at the moment. But I'm making ways because I make like epoxy resin things.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm selling them online and to friends and things to make a bit of money to keep me going.
Yeah.
But I have to find £5,000 for all the fees to get to High Court.
That is absolutely
ridiculous. That's
ridiculous for a person to be expected to do that, to defend themselves. It's like, how is justice ever going to be served if it costs so much? Do you know, it's just wrong. It's just so out of order. And then you have people out there, people like Outlaw, you know what I mean? And they're saying they've got the answers. I was only looking through his website the other night and he's got like, you know, this magic way you can deal with the cops and it's like, it's going to make everything okay. The magic words you say in the courts and it's going to make everything okay. And apparently he's going to be dropping this knowledge now over the next few days or the next week or so. Like he's supposed to be dropping it all before the end of the year. So it'll be interesting to see. But he's thrown all this money towards his legal service then. He'd only up a big post that you commented on, you know, that he's after throwing another ball of cash towards his legal team. There's not more people after being hired. But meanwhile, here we have, like, here's a perfect case now where he could go in and, like, sort things out, get a judicial review. Because, you're a medical cannabis patient and you were pulled in. But, like, I'm just replaying what you're saying. You were pulled in because you were marked. Not because you were swerving, not because you were like, you know, smoke coming out the window.
In his dossier, he says I was not compromised at all.
Exactly. And can I ask what was the level of THC that was found in your system?
That's another thing. I took the blood test, so I got mine done as well.
Yeah.
So mine was, it come back as plus 14 or something. Okay. But on theirs it just says plus 7. They go up to 7. So
yeah.
But I will have that in my system even if I didn't take cannabis for a month.
But I know of studies out there that would recommend upwards of like 50 plus, like for people who consume a level that you would consume being a patient. Because like again, like people don't understand cannabis, like it's not like alcohol where, like, you know, a point is, you know, going to affect people in a very similar way. I know people can develop slight tolerances to alcohol, but in the most part, like not like with cannabis. If you consistently use cannabis, it builds up in your system. You develop a tolerance to it, and if you're a patient, sort of such as a fibromyalgia patient, you need to use it on a consistent basis to keep that level up there, so that it can work its magic in your body. And meanwhile, you get pulled in and you're being subjected into these no, it's a no tolerance limits. That's what they're regarded as in the world scheme, in the scientific schemes, no tolerance limits, because the limit is set on a no tolerance basis, as in the government, the authorities, they have no tolerance for your use of this substance. So therefore, they're going to set the limits so low that if you use it, we're going to criminalize you. We're coming down on you. We don't give a shit if you're driving safe, if you're a threat to people. We're just going to come after you because you're doing something that we don't like. And that's wrong. That's discrimination. Like that's no different from them saying, look, you can't have a job. You can't get on this bus because you're in a homosexual relationship, or because your skin color isn't the one that we approve of. You know, your use of cannabis, it's not something that you're choosing to do. It's something that you have to do because of your genetics, you know, whatever it is that's driving your fibromyalgia. That's what's driving you towards cannabis. And that's not your fault.
I researched it. I have an endocannabinoid deficiency syndrome. I said that. And I need phytocannabinoids to treat fibromyalgia. That is the only thing that works. I do agree. There does have to be legislation. For me to have a puff of something and someone new having a puff of something, completely different. So there does have to be something there because someone new will be all over the place for a little while. But as you say, after 4 hours, they should be okay to drive. It should be impairment. You should be pulled over on impairment as it is on alcohol. If you're impaired, you should not drive, no matter what you use. I totally agree with that. I have been smoking for so many years. There's no way I'm a danger on that. Well, I can't say that. I can't say that for guarantee. But I know I've said to my partner a few times, like, no, we're not going anywhere for the next half an hour or so.
Yeah.
Because I know that I've just sort of like, no, I know exactly what my state of health is.
Exactly, that's it. Like, you know, they're taking this power for us to decide, you know. And like, if when you go look at the scientific side of it, that all of the kind of the unbiased scientific studies, the ones who are just looking at it just from a pure statistical point of view, they're always kind of saying, look, you can't have these limits there, you know, that we have to have sobriety testing. That, like, if the cop notices you're driving as erratic, it's a dangerous looking, then they could pull you in and look, oh yeah, you're consuming, well, you've a bit too much on you there, look, you shouldn't be driving, you're in an unfit condition, I witnessed this sort of behavior. Or, you know, the roadside minimum mandate or the roadside random testing, and you test over the limit and just like, all right, well, we're going to have to get you to do this, like walk the straight line, touch your nose, whatever it is, the sobriety test that they have. Like,
get together, work one out. There's enough kids out there.
Exactly. And I'm sure you wouldn't be like objecting to it because you would be able to do it. You know what I mean? It's like, you know,
if I was compromised, I shouldn't be on the road.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So
I would abide by that myself, you know. I don't want to danger anyone else out there on the road.
That's it. Like, people don't understand this. Like, they think, like, when you consume cannabis that you are going to be, like, out of it and stuff like that. That's not the case for people. It's certainly not the case for medical cannabis patients. And that's been seen time and time again.
I will have a smoke to get up and do something.
Yeah.
You know, it gets me up. It helps me out.
There was one video online, I don't know if you've seen it, but there was, I think it was done in Canada, but they brought in a medical cannabis patient. They brought in somebody who was drinking alcohol, somebody who was going to be taking cocaine, and they had them all do driving tests. And the cannabis person, it was the problem that they kind of perceived with them is they were driving too slowly, they were overly cautious, checking their mirror too much. And the woman actually who they brought in, you know, her level, they were just kind of like, you know, they kept her back after they let the other test subjects go. And they were like, you know, how far can we bring it with this lady? So they literally just had her get blazed, like just do bong, hit, bong, hit, bong, hit. Like, and they were just kind of like, yeah, your level is at like 150 milligrams. Now go do it. Like, and like for her, it became a game almost at this point. She kind of wanted to, she kind of gamified it. Yeah, well, her driving was still good, but like I think the only thing she done is like she overcompensated. She was like trying to do it faster, but she still wasn't speeding. She wasn't breaking the speed limit. She just hit the cone, I think it was, when she was doing the parallel parking in the end because she wanted to parallel park a bit faster or something. She was saying in her head it became a game just because I don't know. They were kind of egging her on, like, you know, it was like, oh, Blaze, can you get? And it just became fun for her. Then, like at that point, she was in a controlled environment as well, so she was safe. Like. So
did you talk to Phil? Have you talked to Phil Monk? Because he done the drugs. He done it with his barrister he's working with. He had a couple of bongs or a couple of joints and something else, and then done the advanced driving test and passed.
Oh, interesting. I did not know that. No, I'm glad you told
really
me that. Yeah, I'm going to definitely follow up with Phil because I've been meaning to have him on anyway for a while. So I'll definitely get him on.
He said he'd be a video witness for me. So that's why I know.
This is again, like, and I hate to keep going back to the outlaw guy, but I think outlaw is taking the wind from under the sails, the wings of people like Phil Monk, people like Steve, People like, again, Trev Coleman and many wondrous people out there, Gary Udes, you know, there's many great campaigners, like with faces and names. Like we've got this guy, Outlaw, he's like a mask, and he's like, he's raking it in. Like I don't know if he's raking it in, but his book is number one on Amazon. He's got a nice little shop up there online. He's got his packs and stuff like that. That Medican card as well. That was like £19.99 per card, and it's sold out.
You don't need a card. You need your photo of your updated prescription and your emails. That's all you need. I don't have a card. Even when I went into court, that was the best thing. Going into Crown Court each time, putting my grinder in there, putting my smoker in there. Have a look, open my grinder. Yes, that's my cannabis. Guess what? I'm a medical user. There's my prescription and there's my email. Thank you. I'll have that back. Oh, I'm just going to go outside for a puff. That was nice.
I love it. No, I definitely think that we need to do something to support your case. And, you know, when does this £5,000 have to be up by? Like, when's the deadline to submit?
I need 1,000 ASAP to start it rolling. Mm-hmm. The guy that's helping me, the barrister that's helping me, he just wants to start. He doesn't expect me to come up with all the money all at once because he knows I can't. Yeah. But he needs £1,000 so that he can start the ball rolling, get the first letter in. What he wants to do, because we've gone over the time for a judicial review, because this judge has been so unprofessional and not getting me my transcripts and that's held us up.
Yeah.
So he's going to write in... what did he call it? He's going to serve the judge something. I can't remember the word he called it. But he's calling the judge for not doing his job, basically, so that we can go through that way to get the judicial review. Because he's held us back, we've gone over time. But it was because of him and not doing his job that's made us go over time. So... that's what we're playing on, but we have to get the ball rolling, but I can't until I can pay this £1,000.
Yeah. Well, there's definitely like people out there right now. I know like myself and yourself, like I'm definitely not, don't have that money just sitting around, but like we've got many businesses out there that would be, that have got deep pockets. You know, I see a lot of CBD companies doing these heavy marketing campaigns and stuff like that. It's like, look, if you believe in the therapeutic benefits of cannabis, whether it be CBD or anything else, you know what I mean? This is a case to be helped, because like this is a form of discrimination against a person who depends on these cannabinoids for therapeutic use, and you're getting discriminated against like by today's society. Like whether it be the businesses, there's other communities out there as well. Like there's a lot of cannabis consumers as well within like say the crypto world. So I don't know if you've even looked into that as an option. Like, you know, if you were to get like a wallet opened up online where people can send donations, you can then convert that cryptocurrency back into a fiat currency.
That scares me.
Yeah, you know, but like there's communities out there that like we need to kind of lean on, because there's a lot of accumulated wealth out there, and it needs to be diverted back to helping like reshape our society in a positive way. Like, and this discrimination that goes on, like this is something that we really need to correct. So if there's people out there like, and they can put their hands in their pockets, we need to come up with a way for them to be able to get it to you. So I think definitely like if, I don't know, maybe through Steve and that they've got a website, See Their Future, that they might be able to open up a portal through that website to be able to divert funds then to support yourself.
We are helping. It's the barrister that I'm working with doesn't want to give Guy Coxall his information about who he is.
Yeah.
So that's where I'm stuck. I can't ask Steve the Future. I can't ask. He's just waiting I can understand where he's coming from. Totally. He just wants a business card or something to say he's on the bar.
Mm-hmm.
But this other guy, I don't know if he's just being facetious or what. He's like, no, you're not getting it.
Yeah. Well, look, outside of that, look, it's like, that doesn't even matter right now. I mean, put all this shit. So you need some cash to be able to get this thing rolling. And we need to be able to get that into you, like, so like that's outside of whatever, like the barrister has been representing you till now. So like, let's not draw any issues there. The guy said he's representing you. So it's like, let's trust him.
Well, I've got all the emails, haven't I, from all the partnership company and everything else. So he's got to be who he is. I just need to get going.
Yeah. Yeah,
totally understand where he's coming from, wanting to know these details before asking these people to hand over cash.
Yeah.
I understand, but I need the cash and I need it now, and I want to get this going. I want to get to the point where we can change legislation. High court is where you do it. High court is where the judges tell the government.
Yeah. No, definitely. I think we need to get you there. And I hope, like, just even through doing this there now to this afternoon, that we'll be able to kind of get this in front of some people, and maybe we can make some magic happen, because I think it's just high time now that we start uniting our community, supporting one another. And there's people out there right now like yourself, like, and they need the support of the community. And I think your case sounds like a great case there to be kind of highlighting the discrimination that goes on within the laws against people who consume cannabis, especially for therapeutic uses such as fibromyalgia. Like, that's not an easy condition to live with. You know, without cannabis, you would be a burden on the system. You know, you're able to do this part-time work, you know, thanks to your cannabis use. And without it, you're probably going to be crippled, you know, because fibromyalgia, like, that really takes a toll on the body. Like, people are just left physically disabled, isn't it? Like, when it gets to the extreme side of it, like.
If that was the only thing that was wrong with me, that'd be absolutely fine. But I've also multiples. I do have mental health. They don't know where I am on mental health, but they don't know if it's PTSD or whether it's ADD. So I'm under the health team for that. I've got cervical spondylosis. I have all the IBS. I have so many different problems that come around with fibromyalgia as well. Yeah. So, yeah, I would be in bed. If I didn't have cannabis, I would be in bed.
Yeah, that's something that has to be said, like, you know, because, like, if you are in bed, then that means you're going to be dependent on other medications, you know, and then other medications to deal with the side effects of those, and then probably hospital visits because of the side effects of the cocktail that you're on, and then eventually, you know, requiring a care team to be looking after you and doing all the things that you're able to do now thanks to bloody cannabis, you know. It's like, I mean, well, you're getting dragged through the courts for that same bloody therapeutic thing that's allowing you not to be a burden on the system, and the system's being a burden on you now. It's like,
I don't need this on my record, you know.
Will I ever get back
if I can't give a zero test?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, well, look, I hope that doing this morning, you know, and I know we kind of I might have picked on Outlaw a bit, but look, I'm hoping that, like, calling him out, that he might just kind of step up and support people like this and come forward and offer people, give people the information that they need to defend themselves in the court, and to be supporting the people there like yourselves to be able to set these judicial reviews and set precedents in court, because it needs to be set. Patients need to be able to use their cannabis free from this discrimination.
You use the right word there. We set precedents for everyone else to be able to use the same thing.
Yeah,
and that's the whole point of this. This is the whole point of getting to high court.
Yeah. So let's hope that just through doing this, that we're able to find somebody out there who'll be able to help you. You said you've done some GoFundMes and stuff in the past. You don't have anything up and running at the moment?
No, I was trying to wait for a guy. He was going to put a nice piece together because he's very good at writing.
Yeah.
So that I could put it on a GoFundMe. But that hasn't come to fruition yet because of everything that's going on. So. Yeah. We'll just have to wait and see. I will try and get hold of Guy again and see if he can sort of, like, do that again for me. But, I can say it's not Guy's fault.
No.
You know, he's asking for something that, you know, should be given. But the other guy is obviously, a barrister as he is, saying, no, I'm not giving it to you.
Yeah, I don't understand what that's about, but it's just kind of like, look, I just don't see it as being an important thing. It's like, if the guy says he's a barrister, like, it's like, it's not as if he's going to run away with the money and stuff like that or anything like that. It's like, he's represented already, so, and you've met him. Yeah. So it's like, come on, let's just get this done. Listen, that's a non-issue. Deal with it coming down the road. Let's set this legal precedent in court and get you your license back and let you get back on with your life, you know.
Get back to work. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that.
No problem at all. And keep me informed if you do set up any GoFundMes or if there's going to be a place where people can donate. Again, I definitely do suggest that you kind of entertain maybe the cryptocurrency avenue, because there's a lot of people out there with a lot of kind of money just sitting around, and they might be able to throw forward, because a lot of the cryptocurrency people believe in, like, trying to create a better world as well. So that's definitely an avenue that you might be able to go down.
Yeah, I'll find someone that knows crypto.
Excellent.
I will do it. Thank you. Send me your email and I can send you a few bits over.
Excellent. Thanks very much again for taking time out of your afternoon there, Selena. And I hope this helps. I hope, you know, you achieve what you want through the courts as well. So best of luck with everything.
I'll keep you updated. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Selena. Bye.
All right. Take care. Bye.
And there you go, guys. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Selena as much as I did. And I really do hope that it does something to help Selena fund this legal battle. Whether it be Outlaw wakes up and kind of puts his hand in his pocket there and digs out some of the money that was donated to him by the community through sales of his books and whatever, or whether it be some other business person out there, or maybe some person who's just got this kind of money lying around, because Selena needs support now, the community needs support, and I believe if we're able to get Selena's case to that high court, Selena might be successful enough and be able to set that precedent then that will not only help Selena, but any other cannabis patient who might find themselves in a similar situation where their medical use of cannabis is putting them in a position where they're over an arbitrary limit and they get discriminated against then. So guys, if there's anybody out there that can help Selena in this situation, if you got this money lying around, do get in touch with Selena. You'll find her over on Facebook, Selena Angel Stein. And also, you know, get on to the Seed Our Future campaign then as well. Guy Coxall and other campaigners there are doing tremendous work helping people like Selena. So definitely give them your support as well, guys. So thanks very much, guys. I'll be back with more interviews very soon, hopefully. So stand till then, stay blazed, keep it lit, much love. And peace.